I think that I don't want to sort of jump ahead to any of your future questions here, but you did reference sort of the impact of the SFU community as well as the tank farms and their uses on the conservation area and so on. And there is pressure from that side on the conservation area, and there's sort of a bit of a with the advent of not just the campus and the students, but the residences up there, and you have a new community that lives up there, and it's their back door, it's their park, and they're utilizing it, and the demands that they have and the needs that they have from a recreational side, you know, start popping up more and more, and there is pressure from that to potentially, you know, want different activities and facilities in the conservation area, which we wouldn't permit, you know, under the covenant, that would support, you know, sort of their recreation and leisure needs, because perhaps they can't be accommodated on, you know, in the community on the campus, because, you know, we're starting to see, you know, there's not enough land there to support that. So I can get into that in more detail if you're going to ask a question later, but I'd say that that's, you know, something that is starting to pop up. And so I myself, and I have to jump back to utilities, because utilities are another component that comes with land development and with serving a population, whether it be a campus population or residents on the mountain, and then also the whole region and the Vancouver Peninsula, Burrard Peninsula, I guess you call it, is the mountain sort of is a transition point for some of the major utilities like BC Hydro and Fortis BC, and of course the petroleum pipelines and so on.
Which one? What is
Fortis? Fortis is gas, so it used to be BC Gas.
Oh, okay, and they so have a corridor.
BC Gas, not so much, but I'm rolling them into the mix in terms of the context of the area. And all those utilities are, you know, seeking ways to expand their supply to the Burrard Peninsula and beyond. And, you know, the demands of density and population growth are meaning that they have to increase their service capacity. And so, you know, they do have existing lines through the area, and they're looking at, you know, longer term and, you know, say the 2018 seems to be a target date for several of them to start expanding their system. And going back to the Conservation Covenant and the SFU transfer agreement and so on, there was a component of it that, of course, had to look at what was already on the land that was being transferred back to the city. And there, BC Hydro was there, BC Tel. There's a list of about 13 different stat rights of way and easements that were on the mountain at the time that were recognized to be retained, and that they were called permitted encumbrances. So those agreements allow them to be there, but there are, you know, documents that set out what terms they can be there under, and some of them are pretty old, or some of them need to be, you know, have renewal options, and some of them go, you know, don't have an end point, some end at a certain point, and, you know, can we renew them? BC Hydro, for example, if they have quite a number of rights of way, some of them are side by side, some of them don't allow undergrounding of their lines. It's all above surface. So technically, under the permitted encumbrances under the current agreements, they're not allowed to expand underground. But if they do expand, we'd prefer them to expand underground. So, you know, it's a bit of a catch-22 situation. Do we go to the province and say BC Hydro wants to expand their services to the region or up to SFU and they want to do this work? Can we change the agreement to allow them to do it underground? And so far, it seems that the province, so far, Environment Ministry and Crown Lands have sort of said that if it's sort of combined with trail development, which is something that's permitted under their covenant,
okay,
it can be looked at as long as it's not impacting, you know, the fisheries and you know, some of the streams and other ecological considerations.
Okay.
There's sort of that juxtaposition between, you know, if you build a community on the mountain and if you want to serve the rest of the population in the Burrard Peninsula, you know, you've got this conservation covenant that it's going to come to a point where there's going to be a clash. And then the other thing that's out there is like cellular antennas. And with the advent of the university, you know, there's more people up there and so on. So the university itself and the university community trust and, you know, the residents would like to have more cell reception up there and so on. So there have been, approaches about allowing a new cell antenna or more than one tower to be located off the ring road into the conservation area.
Oh,
but the covenant doesn't allow for structures like that to be built. So unless the existing permitted encumbrance for, allows for that to happen, then it doesn't. So there is one in the conservation area where BC Hydro has towers, the big towers, and their agreement allows third-party use for communications. So we have allowed one cell antenna array to go on an existing BC Hydro structure because the agreement allows for it.
Okay.
But we did require them to go through rezoning and, you know, address some other things. And we also have a license agreement with the cell provider, and that money is coming back to projects in the conservation area.
Okay.
So,
well, maybe what you're describing kind of ties in with the challenge that the planning department had in way back in 1974, was explaining why the lower boundary of the conservation area was generally located at the 500-foot mm-hmm. contour level. And quote, represented the most easily definable and tangible basis for the delineation, that is, that's based on the topographical extent of existing development mm-hmm. and the height of municipal, the water surface level. But that this was also generally consistent with the cumulative effect of the other contributing factors, and those being relative slope and predominance of natural vegetation. So they were trying to cover everything there.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, how has pragmatism mm-hmm. been a factor in selecting and managing the Burnaby Mountain Conservation Area? Because I think that's what you were just describing,
mm-hmm.
the pragmatism.
Well, in selecting the staff that are here in parks now, we're not setting out a new boundary. We're dealing with the conservation area boundary, and I guess we've been involved to some extent in helping, you know, with the process and so on, but a lot of those decisions are already made, so we're not sort of adding new, but we're trying to acquire what we can to fill in our ownership and acquire more land. But the transition sort of between the developed area and the mountain is sort of that edge. It's fortunate for us in some ways that we have some physical barriers and sort of geopolitical barriers that restrict how much we have to do to manage the edge conditions. But there are things that come up. So in the case of the Barnett, the highway itself, Barnett Highway, is a physical no barrier. What we did find is that one of the park dedication bylaws that we did in 1990, shortly after that, about 1994, the Barnett People Moving Project, which was involved Hastings and Gullardy Way and Broadway Connector up to Coma Lake and North Road, well, I guess Coma Lake and I'm trying to think what North Road transitions, but Clark Road, I guess it is, in Coquitlam and Port Moody, that whole sort of transportation infrastructure was all part of one project to upgrade the access by vehicle from the outlying suburbs through to the city of Vancouver along the Hastings corridor, and getting around the mountain, you know, was a big, big thing. And they made it easier to get around the mountain. But as part of that project, that meant that some of the park dedications that we did were impacted to allow for the road to be upgraded and expanded. So there's fringe along the edge that we lost from that park dedication bylaw on the Barnett side.
Did that also include the parkway as well?
Well, yeah, and then the parkway, we didn't actually lose too much, and we actually benefited in that as part of the survey work that was done. Some of that underlying subdivision structure that existed on the west slope of the mountain, it was all sort of small rectangular lots in the block and lane pattern, you know, the traditional rigid grid. You can see on this drawing how these are all dedicated, but we still have road rights of way that aren't legally closed up here. And so technically those aren't designated, they're actually road allowances. But below that, you see this is all green, and you see this pattern of dashed red lines around here. These were all formerly like that pattern. But through the highway and the Burning Mountain Parkway process, the survey people contacted us that the province had working on it, and they said, would you like us to do road closures and a consolidation of all these pieces in here for you as part of the project? And we said, great. So they did that, and they ended up creating a big lot in here, so we don't have that grid pattern anymore. And I believe at some point we went back and rededicated that area to ensure that the portions that were formerly lane and road allowances were also dedicated now. Okay, so we did this, you know, in our series of park dedication bylaws, we went back and covered that off, but we still haven't done that in this area here because we haven't done that housekeeping item to do the legal road closures and consolidate the lands. So that was actually a benefit to us to do that.
How did it actually impact the biophysical resources?
Well, in that area, and this is where when we sort of talk about the pressures of development and so on, one of the things that came up relevant to this sort of parcel is there is an existing water reservoir just in the corner here, and there's also one up here just off of the University Ring Road. Above the Centennial Pavilion, these are human-built city water reservoirs. Okay, and so there was one up here, and then one just above the entry to the Centennial Parkway, or Centennial Drive from the Burning Mountain Parkway, and around that junction, there was a lot of road dedication that happened, and so when we were working with the university and the community trust on and the rest of the city departments, primarily the engineering department, on a water service and sanitary sewer supply line to the university and the new community there, it was called the Western Supply Line. They needed to find an alignment for the water main component and for the future sanitary main, and they wanted to come directly, you know, straight through this area here, which was a TELUS and BC Hydro easement over the covenanted lot. And we said, well, no, you can't do that. That's in the covenanted lot. We can't introduce a new utility in there. And they all go, what? What do you mean? And this is where, you know, the other city departments throw up their hands and, oh, it's dedicated parkland. But, you know, they're not really all understanding what dedicated parkland means, and they get it confused. I mean, there's park designation, and there's dedicated parkland, and then there's parkland dedicated by subdivision and so on. It's all slightly different. So a designation is, you know, council designates this land for a certain purpose. So it's designated for park use. So it becomes park, but there's no particular status other than, you know, once it's rezoned to a P3 use, then it's zoned for that use. When you get into a park dedication by subdivision plan, in the past, it was title vested in the Crown Provincial. So it's for park, but city doesn't own it and they can't grant any rights over it to anybody else. And then the park dedication bylaw process, it provides some protection in that depending on the legislation in place at the time and what affected us. But it basically says that a current council can dedicate the land for that purpose, meaning that in future, if a future council wants to change the land use, they can't just arbitrarily change it with the 3/4 vote of council. They need to involve the public in that decision.
Would it be fair to say that the covenant itself provides the highest protection for the conservation
at this point? I'd say yes, because the park dedication, you can do the park dedication, but there's still the potential for there to be road dedication, because there's various different sort of levels of jurisdiction and so on. And I think when we were looking into it, that it seemed that any kind of court challenges for road dedication through parks seemed to lose out to road dedication. And then it seems like things like the Petroleum Acts and so on, they're a senior legislation, and they sort of seem to take precedent over a park dedication. But the covenant, in this case, the covenants with the province and the Ministry of Environment, there's certainly the ability for whoever to go to the province and request a change or a waiver or whatever of the covenant, but there's more steps to jump through, and it's certainly, I would consider that the covenant probably is the higher form of protection in that sense, as far as I can tell.
So why, or how, perhaps I should ask, did the covenant become part of the agreement between the city, the province, and SFU when we are solving the problem of
so this goes to the land transfer agreement.
Yes.
The land transfer agreement, it appears that, you know, there was the city and Metro Vancouver applied to the province as part of a provincial program for, I'm just going to sort of go to my cheat sheet for that. Art dedication. It must be this one here. So I just want to make sure that I reference that correctly. So, So the province was at that time had a program which they called the Protected Areas Strategy.
Okay.
And it basically provided an opportunity for the city and the Greater Vancouver Regional District parks to promote sites like Burnaby Mountain, which they felt had a regional significance as green space. And to take that forward as a candidate site for a protected area, a provincial protected area. And so that was their opportunity to try to, you know, resolve this desire to gain back the lands that SFU didn't need for the campus and that SFU, you know, had been reluctant to agree to turn back to the city for, you know, a number of decades. And so... that was sort of the jumping off point to bring everybody together and actually achieve something. So the province was involved through that protected area strategy with the Ministry of Environment, and then SFU as the landowner of some of the lands, and then the city, of course. So basically what they did is they found a way to there was a memorandum of understanding, and it basically tied in the desire to protect the lands outside the ring road as a green zone or a green space for the region, but there was some trade-offs, and so SFU wanted to be able to achieve some market housing and student housing, you know, in the market housing and so on, up on the mountain. And the city, of course, wanted to get the lands back and so on. So there was an agreement that included a couple of different provisions in it, and the province ended up putting a certain amount of money into the pot. And the city gave up some lands on the west slope of the mountain that could be subdivided and sold off, and the monies go into an endowment fund for the university. So the money from the province plus the money from the subdivision and sale of the city lands and their transfer to SFU went into an endowment fund for the SFU, for the university. And in turn, the city and SFU worked on a community plan for SFU that would govern the development and of the campus lands and the market housing that went up there. Good. And so that, as part of that whole agreement, it was a requirement of the province that the lands that came back to the city had the conservation covenant placed on them. And so the idea was that it was, you know, it was protected area as part of that protected area strategy.
So that was a provincial initiative then?
Well, it was a provincial initiative, the protected area strategies, but it applied, you know, they were doing it across the province.
Okay.
And the city and Metro Vancouver applied to have Burning Mountain as one of the areas that could be protected through that program.
All right.
And so it just sort of was a perfect alignment of all these things happening and the desire to, you know, address the situation of the transfer of the lands back to the city. And so it was a way that SFU could gain some benefit from it, and that the region can gain benefit, and that the city could protect the land for...